going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Hey, yo, welcome in to WWL, kicking off day two of the 2025 NFL draft coverage, heading into rounds two and three. I'm Jeff Nowak, alongside Charlie Long, Cullen Steele at Master Control. And we, you know, didn't have the fireworks at the end of the first round that maybe we might have expected with a potential trade with quarterbacks. We only saw two quarterbacks go off the board in the first round. The Saints ended up with Texas offensive tackle Kelvin Banks at number 9, filling a pretty big need with a pretty big body, kind of building that bookend tackle situation across from Talia Sefuaga. Some questions for Trevor Penning, some questions about who plays guard, but obviously the Saints really were enamored with Kelvin Banks. They ended up with him. We're still going to hear a lot about quarterbacks in this second round, but Charlie, how you feeling? How do you feel about Kelvin Banks? What was your initial reaction, and where are you right now?
Yeah, the top 8 was pretty fascinating, wasn't it? Like, just how, you know, obviously the Travis Hunter trade with Jacksonville from 5-2 was the first big kind of domino to fall. But I think the first real shocker of the night was Carolina at pick 8. One pick before the Saints. Everyone had them pinned for a defensive player. Everyone thought they were going Jalen Walker. They instead go the big body receiver, Tet McMillan from Arizona. And at that point, you're thinking, okay, well, the Saints could go Jalen here and have their traditional 3-4 outside linebacker spot filled. They could potentially go Tyler Warren and have that do-it-all offensive weapon. But as, you know, Kellen Moore said in the post-draft presser, it's a big boy game, Jeff. And so they go with the best offensive lineman available, and they get Kelvin Banks from Texas.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. He said it's a big boy game. He said that to us in the pre-draft show. In the post-draft press conference, he said it's a trenches game, which, you know, I feel like he's saying the same thing, obviously. But yeah, the Saints were telling us for days, this is kind of what you're looking at. Like, we heard, want to build from the inside out. It's a big boy game. It's a trenches game. You know, they were telling you without telling you, hey, get ready for an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman or whatever. I think edge rusher is still a pretty big need. But, you know, it's a situation that I just don't – if until your offensive line is where it needs to be, you know, whether it's your biggest need, whether it's, you know, up there on the list, you got to keep taking shots at it. And I've seen people say, well, it didn't work with Trevor Penning. Why do you keep spending picks on the offensive line? Well, you know, the Trevor Penning pick is why you're still spending picks on the offensive line, because you got to get that sorted out. And they didn't pick up his option. You know, I don't think that made the decision that they were going to take an offensive tackle, but I think their willingness to take an offensive tackle if Kelvin Banks was on the board it kind of made that decision for you. And I've seen people say it's a reach. I don't think it was a reach. We talked to Kelvin, and he kind of had his radar up anywhere from six on. He felt like, okay, this is a place I could land. The Jets took a tackle at number seven. So clearly there was some market there. I think Kelvin kind of fell down draft boards. I think he became a victim of people overthinking the situation. Because when you look at him as a player, when you look at the skill set, the athleticism, the size, the ability, the demonstrated success at in the Big Ten, in the SEC, at Texas, a team that's been to the college football playoff semifinal each of the last 2 years. You know, it's the inverse of a Trevor Penning, a guy that you kind of had questions about the production, how he was going to develop at the NFL level. I don't have any questions about Kelvin Banks' production. My only question is where they choose to play him on day one.
Yeah, and the guys kind of dove a little bit into that. And to your point about Kelvin Banks and how high he could have gone, there were reports, Jeff, that that trade with Travis Hunter, where Jacksonville moved up from 5-2 to get the unicorn out of Colorado, the Heisman winner, had they stayed put at pick 5, and there was a lot of buzz that they really liked Ashton Jeanty, and Jeanty was off the board at pick 5, then the report is that the Raiders would have gone Kelvin Banks with the 6th overall pick. Now, because Jeanty was there, they went with the best player on their board. John Spytek kind of talked a little bit about that. But it's really funny how, you know, one trade really, really early in the draft kind of shaped that top 10 significantly. And, you know, Kelvin Banks ends up falling to pick 9.
And the only trade in the top end of the draft. We didn't see another trade until the Giants came back in and took Jackson Dart.
We should get into the Atlanta Falcons trade eventually. We'll talk about that later because it's definitely a questionable value. But staying with Kelvin and kind of to your point about his production at the college level, his durability was also fantastic at Texas. You know, starting all 13 games at left tackle his freshman year in 2022, sophomore year, he was a first team All Big 12 member, started all 14 games at left tackle. And then 2024, he won all these different awards. He was a unanimous All-American. He started 15 games at left tackle. He only missed one game that season. It was the SEC Championship game where he had a left ankle injury. So out of 3 years where he was a three-year starter at left tackle at Texas, he only missed one game.
Right, and the competition level, you know, I don't think you're going to get much better than what you saw.
Well, that's like what people were complaining about with like the Northern Iowa pick with Trevor Penning. But like this is different, right? And it was the same thing with Will Campbell, who was a three-year starter at LSU. A three-year starter at left tackle at Texas, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like the Patriots, I think he's going to do great with them. I think Kelvin is a great pick for the Saints at number 9. And, you know, one thing that I was looking at, a lot of people are going to talk about the Eagles and how the Eagles found their success with Kellen Moore last year. I go back to the Cowboys in 2016. Kellen Moore, I've been doing that, Kelvin and Kellen, it's tough.
Yes.
Kellen Moore was on that Cowboys roster. He was a quarterback. He was a player in 2016, the year that they drafted Dak Prescott, slotted him behind arguably the best offensive line in the NFL, arguably with the best run game in the NFL with Ezekiel Elliott, and you had a fourth-round rookie quarterback immediately have success. He was the offensive rookie of the year. And to me, it's like, yeah, I go back to there. He sat there in first person, watched that happen. So it shouldn't be a surprise. He went out to the Eagles and kind of had success the same way. You built the offensive line. You pounded people over the head with a devastating game, and you had success. There should be no surprise that Kellen Moore and the Saints are in lockstep on their kind of philosophical belief that you need to start with the offensive line and build out from there. You know, we talked about it extensively yesterday. Going back to 2015, the Saints have used all – they have taken a first-round offensive or defensive lineman every year other than 2019 when they used their top pick, a second-rounder, to take Eric McCoy. So it's not new. It's just how they build, and it's their belief system.
Yeah, and so, you know, three tackles going in the top 9 as well, Jeff. I think we've called this draft, and a lot of folks have called it the same thing, the quote-unquote meat and potatoes draft, where it doesn't have, like, the super flash or pizzazz of last year with all the quarterbacks and top-level wide receivers. But if you can get some solid-level starters throughout this year or this year's draft, I think you're feeling pretty good. And Kelvin Banks just feels like a safe pick. And we talked with him last night after the selection. He came on with Bobby, Mike, Deuce, Haas, and Steve, and the guys got to speak with him. Also a very high-character guy. You can kind of hear it in his voice and how he answers the questions that they were throwing at him. We'll play that interview for those that missed it last night in a little bit here. But it's great stuff from Kelvin, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him in a black and gold uniform. Going back to your question from earlier, though, it's now how the Saints coaching staff will use him, because he is a day one starter. There's no question about it. There's a guy that's going to be plug and play for the Saints right off the bat. Now, what do they decide to do? Do they put him at left tackle, which has been his natural position for the 30-plus games that he played at Texas, and then move Talia Seifuaga back to right tackle? Or do you potentially keep Talia at left tackle because he was so good at left tackle in his rookie campaign, and you maybe play Kelvin Banks at left guard because that's kind of the question mark on this offensive line? And then you just have a real badass, you know, left side of your offensive line. I think it's an interesting one. Obviously, the Saints coaching staff will decide what they want to do with them. But when you can just kind of get a top level or top of the line offensive line prospect, you know, you can't pass on doing it.
No question. We're going to get more into the rest of the first round with Justin Mello when he comes on at 4:35. Draft analyst for the Draft Network. We're also going to hand off to Draft Fest. Starting at 6 p.m., you got the guys Deuce, Haas, Bobby Hebert, Mike Dottilli, and Steve Geller out at Hooters in Metairie. But, you know, I am curious on your take. You know, a lot of people wanted a skill position. Tyler Warren was staring people in the face, a very popular pick, or at least a very popular mock draft pick for the Saints. And he kind of felt like, man, they could go here. They could really set up that offense. And, you know, not only did they not go Tyler Warren, Tyler Warren wasn't even the first tight end off the board. It was actually Colston Loveland out of Michigan who went to the Bears. Tyler Warren went two picks later. But, you know, I think that's a good indicator that, you know, we could sit here all day long, talk about mock drafts, have all these discussions. At the end of the day, so much of the, kind of the mock draft conversations is a guess. And we're kind of trying to figure out, oh, how much does this team like this guy? How much does this team like this guy? You know, we're talking, is a tight end worth a top 10 pick? We didn't even have the right tight end. We didn't have the right tight end one in this draft class. So I just thought that was kind of fascinating to watch happen.
Yeah, and it was funny because, you know, it felt like the Jets pick at 7 was always going to be one of Armon Membu, the right tackle from Missouri, or Tyler Warren, the tight end from Penn State. They go with, obviously, Membu. And at that point, you're wondering, okay, is Kellen Moore going to get this, you know, offensive weapon for the Saints at pick 9? And Warren didn't just go behind Loveland. He went a couple picks behind Loveland. And he went to, you know, the Colts, who everybody, it was the worst kept secret in pre-draft process that the Colts were going to take one of those two tight ends, especially if one of them were available. If both of them were gone at that point, they would have been in some trouble. But it was a huge hole that they had to fill. Tyler Warren goes behind Colston Loveland. A lot of the buzz, though, kind of leading up to the draft, Jeff, was that, yes, a lot of people had Warren as the higher-ranked player because he was the best tight end in college football this past year. But around league circles, it felt like it was really, really close. And some teams obviously had him above Loveland, above Warren. And the Bears obviously were one of those teams.
No question. No question. What do you think of the Saints pick? Hit us up on the Oakland Jewelers talking text line 504-260-1870. We're obviously going to get a lot more into the second round. The Saints have three picks today. They pick at number 40. They pick at number 71. They pick at number 93. That is if there aren't any changes, if there aren't any trades. When we come back, I want to talk more about quarterbacks. What did you think about the quarterbacks that came off the board? Only two of them in the first round. What do you think of the quarterbacks left on the board? We're going to get into all that and a lot more, kicking off a long day of Draft Fest coverage. I'm Jeff Nowak alongside Charlie Long, Cullen Steele behind the glass. Keep it locked on WWL. Welcome back to Draft First Take here on WWL AMFM.com and the Odyssey app. I'm Jeff Nowak alongside Charlie Long, kicking off today's coverage of the Saints and the NFL draft. We got rounds 2 and 3 coming up. Saints have three picks right now. Seems like it's going to be a busy day. We'll find out. Saints fans, get out to Hooters of Metairie on Veterans Boulevard for all the live action of the draft, plus all-pro analysis and exclusive interviews with all the Saints draft picks here from Bob Hebert, Mike Dottilier, Deuce McAllister, Steve Geller, and Mike Haas. And Charlie, you know, the quarterbacks were always going to be a big conversation. They were a big conversation coming in. There was a lot of debate over Shedeur Sanders. Is he a first-round pick? Is he a number 2 overall pick? Is he a second-round pick? Well, the NFL told you that they did not feel he was a first-round pick. Cam Ward came off the board at number 1 overall to the Titans, as we all expected. Then we waited and we waited and we waited. The Saints didn't pick a quarterback at number 9. The Steelers didn't pick a quarterback at number 21, and then the Giants traded in. They took Jackson Dart over Shedeur Sanders. Now, the Browns have two picks at the top of the second round. If they want to go Shedeur like they didn't at number two or number five, they can do it. They're going to have two chances to do it. But what was kind of your take on the quarterback situation? Because I thought there was the potential for teams to kind of start stumbling over each other, trying to trade in the back end of the first to pick up a quarterback with a fifth-year option at the back end of their contract. We didn't see that. I expect some of these guys to go off quick in round two.
Yeah, the only one was Dart with the Giants. With, you know, this quarterback class, it just kind of reaffirmed that the NFL does not like this group of QBs, right? Like, Cam Ward was viewed as the 101. I know that I think it was Jeff Ireland had talked about him as one of his two favorite prospects in this class. But, you know, outside of that, there's a big drop-off from Cam Ward to QB2. And QB2 ended up being Dart. I know that a lot of people were really, you know, questioning why Shedeur fell out of the first round entirely. But, and listen, he's going to be picked at some point in round two. I think relatively early in round two as well. We'll see where exactly he goes. I'm still not convinced, Jeff, that he goes to the Saints if he's there at pick 40. I just don't, you know, and we'll see. I could be wrong. But everything in the pre-draft process tells me that maybe Kellen is a little bit more intrigued by Jalen Milroe and Tyler Shuck from Louisville, you know, regardless of what you feel about either one of those prospects, than someone like Shedeur.
Yeah, I do think, you know, it's funny because it's like you look at some of the draft slides in the past. You know, Aaron Rodgers is the one that everyone kind of goes to, and he was actually in the green room with you know, the scowl on his face, like, when are they going to take me? He did go in the first round, obviously, to the Packers, but he fell all the way to the back end. I don't think we should, you know, like, the reason Shedeur feels like that is because what everyone was being told was not believed, right? Like, I think throughout this entire process, you heard from so many different avenues of, I don't know if this guy's a first round pick. You know, he might be a good quarterback, but I don't think he is a top 10 quarterback. Is he a first round quarterback? And at the end of the day, he wasn't, right? But I don't think it was, oh, there's character concerns, there's this and that, and suddenly I'm not taking him at number two, I'm not taking him at number five, I'm not taking him at number nine. I don't think these teams really ever were in on him to not take him. Now, Jackson Dart, I think, is a different story, and we'll really see what people feel about Shedeur in this round if he falls out of the second round entirely. I agree with you. I don't know if the Saints are in on Shedeur.
Right.
I think it's more likely they end up with a Jalen Milroe. I think Tyler Shuck, you know, people aren't going to get excited about Tyler Shuck. I think Tyler Shuck is the second-best quarterback in this draft. Personally,
some people viewed him as the first, and that's a really intriguing one. Like, Jeff, I don't know. Like, we'll see what happens with the quarterback group. Then once we're sitting at pick 40, we had a couple people text in saying that they were happy that the Saints didn't trade up. And I agree.
Yeah.
For moving up into the first round, you would have had to give up a lot of capital, as you saw from the Falcons and, you know, that ridiculous trade that Terry Fontenot cooked up to move up and get James Pierce Jr.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah.
We'll definitely talk about that specifically with Justin Mello. I want to get his thoughts. But there's a lot of really good players on the board available right now. So if you're sitting at pick 40 and one of these guys falls into your lap and maybe he's like a top 25 player on your board, do you force the quarterback? That's kind of my question. It's like, or do you just stick with your board, go with the best player available at pick 40 if it's someone that's, you know, in your top 25-ish, maybe closer to 30 that just falls right into your lap? Because there are some really good players available.
I think it's specifically at the cornerback position.
Yes.
And, you know, I want to get into more about what Alante Taylor said on WWL. This is going to be a shorter segment, so we wouldn't have time. But, you know, I think you're – I don't know if you're going to play Alante outside. I think you need another outside corner because I think Alante is going to fit into this, you know, star position. That's what Brandon Staley calls it. He doesn't call it a nickel. He calls it a star, and it's more of a hybrid linebacker safety in terms of responsibilities. It's what – Jalen Ramsey played in 2020 with the Rams. It's what Derwin James played. So I think cornerback is a position of need, and there's some really intriguing cornerbacks still on the board with Will Johnson and, you know, Trey Amos and some of these other guys. Chevon Revel's still on the board coming off that knee injury. But I just, you know, it's going to be tough for me when I get to number 40, assuming they don't trade up, and I'm not in love with any of these players. Like, I like some of these quarterbacks. I think they could develop. I am not in love with any of these quarterbacks. And when you see the level of talent that you could bring in, it's just tough to sell when, you know, are they better? Like, are these better prospects than Spencer Rattler? I don't know if they are.
Right. And so then you're looking at, once again, potentially forcing a quarterback at 40 versus taking a better prospect, someone that's higher on your board. And so that's going to be an interesting question that we'll have to see how they answer it. I went on with Scoot earlier, Jeff, and I basically said I imagine that it's a little bit over a 50-50 split that they kind of go quarterback at the 40th overall pick. But, you know, there's also ways that you can play this where do we go a top corner? Like you mentioned, Will Johnson's falling because there's apparently some issues with his knee. And that's why he wasn't a first-round player. Like, if you look at what he did in 2023, entering the year, he was like a top five prospect. And he was viewed very heavily to be a top 10-ish or so pick in the 2025 draft. But he's got some issues with his knee. That's why he's following the medical reasons. Trey Amos, I love him. I mean, I'm biased because he's a former UL guy, Raging Cajun, that transferred to Alabama before transferring to Ole Miss. Mike described him as someone with a quote-unquote athletic arrogance to him, where he hates giving up catches, but he's also he doesn't let it negatively affect his play either. So I really like him as a prospect. He could play either man or zone as well. Deuce had a great evaluation of him last night. And then Savone Revel, as you kind of mentioned, from East Carolina, a freak athlete, complete freak. That would have been a first-round pick had it not been for a torn ACL. So a couple, you know, medical issues here for some of these top corners, but the corner class this year as well isn't the best. So if you're going to get one, and it is a position of need, moving on from Marshall and Lattimore and losing Paulson and Debo in free agency, I think they should absolutely do it earlier rather than later.
Right, because I don't think they're going to be there later, and that's the issue. If you don't do it in the second round, I don't know if those guys are going to be there, even in the third round where you have two picks. But all right, we're going to be coming back with Justin Mello of the Draft Network, break down his thoughts on last night, the first round, and his expectations for rounds two and three tonight. We'll be back with more of the Draft First Take show brought to you by TrainSouth.com right after this on WWL. Back in on WWL, kicking off Draft First Take, a busy day of draft coverage, rounds two and three. Saints have three picks. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Charlie Long. This show is brought to you by TrainSouth.com. And we're going to go to the Oakwin Heart Jewelers talk and text line, bring in a friend of the program, Justin Mello of the Draft Network. A lot to talk about. Busy first day. You know, the transition from Friday to Saturday is always the brutal one for me. But how are you feeling, Justin? How did the first round treat you?
I'm feeling good. Yeah, I thought it was a fun round. You know, a little unpredictable. You know, kind of started right off the top, right? It was a little surprised that Cleveland traded out of the Travis Hunter pick. Though they did get great value in return for making that decision. You know, wasn't any, you know, real stunners in the opening five, I'd say. But once you got down there, I thought New Orleans with Kelvin Banks, I thought was a bit of a surprise. Certainly Tyler Booker to the Cowboys, did not have that on my bingo card at 12. And then it even goes late. You know, Tyreek Williams to Detroit, I thought was probably more of a second round pick. So definitely a fun round, lots of action and lots of unpredictability.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Browns trading out of the Travis Hunter spot. What did you think of the Jaguars trading in to the Travis Hunter spot, both in terms of how much they gave up and kind of like I kind of see it as, hey, if I'm trading up, if I'm giving up that much for Travis Hunter, it's because I'm committed to playing him both ways. You know, I think if the Browns took him, they might have had a decision to make of like how much are we going to do this. When you're investing that much in a potential two-way star, you're going up to get the two-way star, right?
Yeah, they gave up a lot. There's no doubt about it. I think if you had looked at, you know, one of those old, you know, over-fashioned trade charts, if you will, Jacksonville lost that trade by about 1,300 points. Now, if you're sitting at home and wondering what that means, that's the equivalent of the eighth overall pick. You know, they essentially gave up, in terms of extra points, an extra eighth overall pick in the top 10. So they gave up a lot. You know, there's no denying. I respect the aggressiveness. You know, there are people out there. I talked to scouts throughout this process who think that Travis Hunter's a Hall of Famer. You know, so I think for Jacksonville, if he ends up being the kind of guy that they think he can be, they're not going to regret that move. Now, what is interesting is you talk about if you're going up and making that move, that he's a two-way guy. Well, they didn't necessarily say that in their press conference after taking him. They said that he'd start in the wide receiver room, and we'll get him in there to the DB room a little bit. But they certainly, you know, they pumped the brakes a little on him being a full-time two-way guy. So I respect the aggressiveness from a 34-year-old first-year, first-time general manager in James Gladstone. Certainly, this is a decision that will be put under the microscope, for years to come, and it'll be interesting to see how it pays off.
Okay, Justin, I want to get your thoughts on the other two trades into the first round because they had very different value, in my opinion. The Falcons moving up to 26. They also get, you know, pick 101, which is the third round pick this year. The Rams move back from 26. They move back 20 spots to 46. They get a seventh round pick and a 2026 first rounder. And then one pick prior, the Giants make that trade up to get Jackson Dart to 25 with the Texans, where they send the Texans 34, 99, a third round pick, and a 2026 third round pick. I know the jump from 34 to 25 is obviously pretty significant versus 46 to 26, but I mean, is it really, you know, with the Texans getting 2 third round picks and then the Rams get a 2026 first round pick, it just seemed kind of strange.
Yeah, Atlanta gave up a lot. You know, there's no denying. And it's funny, if you followed that team, and I mean, you guys are in the same division, if you'd followed that team over the last couple of years, they've really struggled to solve the pass rushing position, right? They've thrown money at it in free agency. They've gotten veterans. You know, they brought in Bud Dupree at one point. They made the trade for Matthew Judon. They have missed on a ton of drafted pass rushers. You know, but they were always half measures, right? They had the Penn State kid, Arnold Abitike, for a while, D'Angelo Malone. Like, they've just missed on mid-round rusher after mid-round rusher. They've missed in free agency. You know, they get Jalen Walker there, and then they decide to – like, their pass rush has been that bad in recent years. They had to double down. But this is a very, very risky move. Make no mistake about it. Not only what they gave up, but the prospect they came up to get, right? I don't know if you guys are familiar with, you know, Bob McGinn. He writes that piece every year on Go Along. It's terrific, where he talks to scouts about, you know, character concerns. One of them, you know, of course, anonymously said that James Pierce had some of the worst character he had ever seen in terms of some of the off-field stuff. Now, nothing, you know, nothing legal or anything like that, but just from an attitude and effort and personality standpoint. So he's got a lot of potential. He's a long guy. When he's on, he's on. But, you know, he was very inconsistent on tape as a run defender. In fact, to the point where they started taking him off the field altogether. And obvious rundowns, and I don't think the pass rushing production quite met expectations this year. So it's a massive roll of dice for Atlanta, and they gave up a ton to go get a guy that if they miss on, it's going to be a big miss.
Justin, before we get into the second round and some of the prospects still on the board, I wanted to get your thoughts on the rest of the NFC South, because in my opinion, Carolina, you know, outside of, I guess, the top five trade with Jacksonville going up to get Travis Hunter, Carolina kind of made the first surprise of the night, because, you know, throughout the entire pre-draft process, they were tied to Jalen Walker. They were tied to drafting a defensive player, maybe a defensive lineman with the 8th overall pick. And they go Tet McMillan from Arizona, the big body wide receiver, to kind of help their passing attack with Bryce Young and continue his growth. But then later on in the first round as well, another kind of surprising pick with Tampa Bay, you know, similar situation where they were tied to Jahad Campbell. They were tied to Donovan Azaraku, who didn't end up getting picked in the first round at all. Some different defensive players. And they go another wide receiver weapon with Emeka Ebuka from Ohio State. It was a little bit surprising for the NFC South with those two teams outside of what happened with Atlanta.
Yeah, I thought Carolina was a bit of a surprise. I didn't think it was a major one, because anytime you got a quarterback that, you know, number one overall, you're still invested in and you're trying to figure out if he's the future or not, because obviously, you know, things haven't quite gone as swimmingly as you hoped they would. Though this past year, I think, you know, certainly showed more promise than we thought he was going to show after that disaster of a rookie year. When you have a chance to go out and get a big-bodied, you know, QB-friendly ex boundary playmaker, if you will, I'm not shocked they pulled the trigger on that. Now, they were the worst pass rushing unit in the league, in my opinion, last year. So certainly it would have made, you know, some sense to go get a Jalen Walker, even a Michael Williams, you know, who went just a couple picks later to San Francisco. But they just couldn't resist the urge, you know, to kind of get Bryce Young some help. And they don't have a true X, right? I think they've got a slot guy, and they've got a couple Z receivers, I would argue, but not a real X type of guy. So they couldn't resist that temptation. Now, going over to Tampa Bay, I did think that was a bit of a surprise. Obviously, a best player available decision, in my opinion. Now, you know, you can never be too rich, I think, as most people would agree. But, you know, to go get him after re-signing Emeka Ebuka, that is, after re-signing Chris Godwin, it did surprise me a little. But Jason Litt up there, Jason is a smart general manager. I think he knows, you know, Godwin coming off that injury, even though they gave him what they gave him, Mike, and you pair Mike Evans in that, they're not going to be there forever, all right? They're not going to be there for much longer than they are now. So at some point, they're probably going to be very, very thankful that they made that pick. I don't know that it'll pay immediate dividends. I'm curious to see how they get all these guys on the field. Because remember, they took Jalen McMillan last year. Was it second round? I think it was. So they've got quite a bit invested in that position. You can't play all four of them at the same time. Certainly, you're going to have injuries. Guys are going to get banged up. And he'll probably have a rookie year impact, but I, you know, I do agree. I thought Jahad Campbell was a great fit for the Todd Bowles defense. I know he had, you know, there was an injury flag before the draft, so that's potentially why he didn't go as early as I thought he might go. But certainly, I thought, you know, Tampa certainly was the bigger surprise to me.
Yeah, so we've talked about all the other picks in the division but the Saints pick, so I do need to get your opinion on Kelvin Banks at number 9. You know, I saw some people say it was a bit of a reach. I think it's easy to forget, you know, you go into this season and Kelvin Banks is probably the top offensive tackle prospect. Obviously, Will Campbell, these guys are up there, but you know, he's a big name that I think maybe got slept on a little bit throughout this process. What did you think of the Saints' decision to bring him in, and what do you think of the player?
I think my first thought was, and pardon me, I haven't seen if they've clarified this via, you know, post-draft press conference, but my initial thought was, where are they going to play him, right? Because as we know, you know, he played left tackle this year for Texas. There was talk throughout the off, you know, the pre-draft process that maybe he kicks inside to guard. But when I look at what they have there, you know, you drafted Talese Fuaga last year in the first round. I never regret, you know, over-investing in linemen, but you moved him from the right to the left, right? From Oregon State there on the right side. So what do you do now? You know, are you asking Kelvin Banks to learn the right side? Are you moving Fuaga back to the right side after asking him to make the transition last off season? Or are you just playing Kelvin Banks at guard, right? So that's the number one question I had as soon as they made the move. I said, that's very interesting. I wonder what they do with Fuaga and where they play Banks. Either way, you're making one of them uncomfortable in some sense, right? Or, you know, Fuaga would probably have no issues going back to the right, but it seems kind of silly, right, after you ask him to be your left tackle. That was the first thing that struck me. The player itself, you know, I liked him on tape. I thought we overcomplicated the situation a little bit. I thought he was a left tackle, personally. You know, that was my opinion during the process. I didn't really agree with all the chatter of him kicking inside. I think he can do it, but I didn't think that he can't play tackle, right? So I do think he can play tackle. He's big. I think he moves well for his size. A little inconsistent on tape. Has to get a bit better with balance issues, pad level, things of that nature. But I thought they got a good, you know, quality football player. I'm just curious what the plan is.
Justin, every single year players fall out of the first round that you kind of envisioned as being first round picks. And with the Saints picking at pick 40, they're not going to have to wait long into the second round for their second selection in this draft class. I wanted to get your thoughts on some of the top prospects still left available that you were surprised made it to this point, and if any of those guys could potentially fall to 40.
Yeah, the two that struck me, or maybe three, and we know why all three didn't get drafted in the first round. One of them is Mike Green, you know, the edge rusher out of Marshall. You know, there's an alleged, you know, legal, you know, off-field situation there that teams had questions about and obviously weren't comfortable with because I thought he was a top 15 player on tape. So for him not to go in the opening 32, there was obviously some, you know, at best mixed feelings regarding the off-field situation. The one that really stunned me was Will Johnson, the corner out of Michigan. Now, I know he missed the majority of this past season with a shoulder injury, and then apparently a potentially chronic knee injury was flagged during the rechecks, the medical rechecks. So that explains that. But I thought on tape, I thought he's one of the six or seven best players in this draft. So those two are big ones. Luther Burden from Missouri is the other. You know, again, another guy similar to Mike Green, where, you know, there's a character, alleged character concerns. It's not a legal situation like Mike Green's may have been, but there is certainly some effort and attitude questions regarding Burden's evaluation, and that's why he fell. I didn't even mention Shador Sanders, right? I think those three guys were the first, you know, big surprises to me. I thought all three of them were first-round talents. There's a lot left on the board. You know, you mentioned Donovan Azeraku is another one that I think is going to go really early. Where do these quarterbacks land? We've got three of them, right, that are potential, were being talked about as potential first-round picks. So there's a lot of talent left on the board. A lot of receivers, too. Jalen Noel, Jaden Higgins, Iowa State pair. Really curious to see how the chips fall.
Yeah, so I'm going to put you on the spot here. One more question. You know, if you're picking at 33, if you're the Browns and you're like, hey, we're going to take a swing on one of these quarterbacks, who is it?
Yeah, I think mine would have been Shador Sanders, right? I would have had him ahead of Jalen Milroe or Tyler Shuck throughout this process. I think, and I've got concerns about Sanders. I think I said that the last time I was on here. There are things about his game that I don't love, and that's not even taking, you know, the off-field questions or the attitude stuff or his father, taking any of that into consideration. They're just aspects of his game I wasn't super comfortable with, but I am more comfortable with it than any, you know, Jalen Milroe, who's, you know, probably got the highest upside of any of them. And if you hit, it's going to hit big. But there's a, you know, there's the basement's really low on him too, right? Not an accurate passer right now. You know, in the 50% in terms of accuracy this past year. But if you hit again, you build that offense around him. He runs a 4.39. You've seen what the Eagles have done with Jalen Hurts, what the Ravens have done with Lamar Jackson. Though I'd argue both of them are better throwers of the football than he is. there's potential there. But with Shador, I'm just more comfortable with some of the traditional aspects of his game. I know he's very accurate. He reads the game at a high level, very good diagnosing pre-snap. And when he makes decisions, you know, that's his biggest issue. When he can make a decisive decision, he does so at a high level, and he gets the ball out on time, and he's accurate. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But if I was Cleveland at 33, if they didn't trade out of the Travis Hunter pick, they would have had a chance to reunite Travis Hunter and Shador Sanders, right? That would have been interesting, but they decided not to go that route.
Just for fun, Justin, before we let you run, your favorite pick from day one of the draft?
Oh, boy, that is tough. Abdul Carter was my number one ranked player, you know, pre-draft. I kind of respect that the Giants didn't overthink the process, and they could have. You know, they got two edge rushers, two great ones under contract, rookie contracts at that. Or, sorry, one of them on the rookie contract. The other one they traded for and gave up a lot to get him and paid him handsomely. So they could have overcomplicated it. You got a GM and a head coach who are clearly on the hot seat. They needed to get a quarterback there. They need to get one. They come up and get Jackson Dart later. But they didn't. They fought that temptation at three. They took the best player. I think they got one who's going to be an outstanding football player, a Pro Bowl-type rusher in Abdul Carter.
All right, great stuff. As always, Justin Mello of the Draft Network. I know this is a busy week for you, so I appreciate you taking the time. And I know you do a lot of work going into this, so to make sure to enjoy it, man.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Justin.
All right. Stick around for more of Draft First Take, followed by the TrainSouth.com WWL Draft Fest coming up at 6 o'clock live from Hooters of Metairie on Veterans Boulevard. Keep it locked on WWL. All right, Houdat Nation, welcome to Draft Fest Friday. We're getting ready for rounds 2 and 3. I'm Jeff Nowak alongside WWL Swiss Army Knife Charlie Long. We're sizing up yesterday's draft, went through a lot of that in the first hour. Next hour, we're going to dive more into rounds 2 and 3. Saints currently hold pick number 40 in the second round, and then 71 and 93 in the third round. We're going to take you up till 6 p.m. We're going to toss over to the guys at Hooters in Metairie, get the takes from Mike Dettillier, Bobby Hebert, Deuce McAllister, Steve Geller, and Mike Haas. Going to be a busy night. Make sure to keep it locked on WWL for all the action. Who dat? Let's do it. Hey, y'all. Welcome back. This is Jazz Fest weekend, but we are talking about Draft Fest. This is Draft First Take. I'm Jeff Nowak alongside Charlie Long, kicking off today's coverage of the Saints and the NFL Draft rounds 2 and 3. Saints fans, make sure to get out to Hooters of Metairie on Veterans Boulevard for all the live action of the draft, plus all pro analysis from Deuce McAllister, Bobby Hebert, Mike Haas, Steve Geller, and the gang. Also exclusive interviews with all the Saints draft picks. We got an exclusive interview with Kelvin Banks yesterday, the Saints' number 9 overall pick. We're going to play that later this hour. But in this first segment, I want to dive in on, okay, the Saints pick at number 40. Who do we want them to take? Not necessarily who do we think they're going to take, because as we know, the Saints have their own designs on how they like to build their roster, not always going after the most exciting player, but the necessary players, the offensive linemen, the big bodies in the first round. Six straight drafts, they've spent a first-round pick on an offensive or defensive lineman. And, you know, the only reason they didn't in 2019 was they didn't have a first-round pick, and they spent it on Eric McCoy. But right now they're sitting at number 40. And so, Charlie, I'm going to throw it to you. If the Saints do not trade, if they do not move, if they sit at 40, who are some of the players that you would like to see them either draft or consider or look at over the next few hours?
Well, listen, Jeff, I mean, there's some really good players left on the board. I know I've said that multiple times in this show, and it's always that way, where teams will kind of have different boards from what you think, and, you know, they'll take a player in the first round that you thought was going to go in the second round, and then a guy falls because of it. You know, with Will Johnson specifically, I know a lot of people had kind of figured that he could potentially be a dark horse candidate for the Saints in round one, but obviously the medicals are something that's kind of scaring teams away from taking him in those first 32 picks. It'll be interesting to see how far he slides. But the corners, kind of like we were talking about last hour, Jeff, there's some really good corners available right now. I mean, he's obviously the top one. He's the number 11 player on Mike D's big board. But past that, Trey Amos, and I'm a little bit biased because he's a former UL Raging Cajun before he went to Bama and then Ole Miss. He's number 36 on Mike's big board, another top corner. Savone Revel, if you want just the freakish athlete that you could potentially mold into a stud corner at the NFL level, it's Revel. Now, you also have to, similarly with Will Johnson, you have to be pretty okay with his medicals because he's coming off a torn ACL. But the tape that he put out there at ECU, he's just unbelievable, especially how fast he can fly. Now, those are the three corners that we could take a look at. Wide receivers, really interesting here as well. You know, I think wide receivers a little bit different than cornerback this year because the corner class isn't as deep necessarily, but there are some really good receivers available at the top of this board. Luther Burden is the first one. He probably should have been a first-round pick. I'm surprised to see him in the second round. I don't think he's going to be there at pick 40, but if he is, you know, that's definitely something you have to consider. If not, if you're looking for more of the big-body traditional X, there's not many of them in this draft class, but Jaden Higgins from Iowa State kind of fits the billing. You know, just a couple different guys. Nick Amon-Wari, the safety from South Carolina, another freakish athlete in the secondary. So those are the first ones that kind of come to mind.
Yeah, I always find the start of the second round so difficult because there's always so many. I wish the Saints had 10 draft picks because
yes.
There's so many players in so many positions I'd like to see them go after. And that's why quarterback is tough for me because I don't know if I'm in love with any of these quarterbacks. And, you know, whether it's like you want a tight end, you got Mason Taylor
yes.
on the board. You mentioned the cornerbacks. You mentioned Jaden Higgins, right? The wide receivers. There's so many great options. But I look at edge rusher. I came into this draft feeling like edge rusher, at least that kind of weak side outside linebacker that the Saints don't really have. I want to get Brandon Staley a piece to kind of mold his new defense, and that's why in my mock draft I ended up with an edge rusher at number 9. Saints went offensive tackle. I still feel like edge rusher is that prospect that I want to add, and there's two still on the board that I think should have gone in the first round. One of them is Mike Green. You know, there's some character concerns. Obviously, there's some things that came out at the combine that, you know, teams might have some red flags on if they didn't maybe vet those as well as they might want to. You might stay away from him. So he's a tough one. But Mike Green is an excellent, excellent outside linebacker prospect. And so if you're looking for a safer prospect, Donovan Ezeraku out of Boston College, you're talking about the number 1 and 2 players in the NCAA in the entire nation in terms of total sacks last year. So if you're looking for, you know, we talk about, oh, production. You know, we're tired of these developmental guys who didn't produce in college. That is not the case for Mike Green or Donovan Ezeraku. So, you know, I think it's really a question, hey, do you want a quarterback? Do you feel like you have a quarterback of the future? Because if you do, you have to go get him. But if you don't, if it's a question, if you're kind of just trying to take a shot because you feel like you need to take a shot, I would much rather see them just continue to build up their roster. And I think you do that through the lines and you do that with one of these edge rushers personally.
So here's an interesting tweet from Daniel Jeremiah from earlier this morning. NFL Network draft guru had kind of posted that the early run in round 2 is going to be on receivers and edge rushers. So to your point, if they want to get one of those guys, probably do it at 40 and not have to worry about pick 70, 71, and then later on 93. Yeah, it's just super interesting. I'm not entirely sure that Mike Green or Donovan Ezeraku are going to be there at pick 40, kind of similar to some of the other prospects that I was just listing off. We'll have to see, but I'm right there with you. If either one of them is on the board, that's going to be really, really hard to pass up. They're both super, super talented with a ton of production at the college level. You know, defensive tackle is going to be interesting. There's going to be a run on interior defensive linemen at some point today. Maybe it's kind of later in round 2 into round 3. Same thing with the running back position. So defensive tackle, maybe one of the first ones off the board will probably be Darius Alexander from Toledo, who's just an NFL-ready guy. He's an older prospect, and that's probably why he wasn't a first-round pick. But he was really impressive in the pre-draft process. You know, if you're talking about the running backs, I was a little bit surprised that Trevion Henderson didn't get selected in round 1. He's going to get selected early on round 2. His teammate, Quinshon Judkins, will join him right there as well. And then the run on running backs will definitely start. So defensive end is definitely something to keep an eye on. Corner, as I kind of mentioned, is really what I'm targeting with the 40th overall pick. But don't be surprised if there's very soon a run on defensive tackles and running backs as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of positions where the first one comes off and suddenly, you know,
everyone's
the position
gotta get
starts
on
to disappear.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're trading, I'm assuming the Browns aren't going to trade. I'm assuming the Browns are going to take a quarterback. If you're trading up to 33, who would it be for? Like if you saw a guy on this list and you were like, I'm going to go put my lot in. I'm making sure I'm getting that guy. Kind of like the Saints did with Kool-Aid McKinstry last year. They didn't trade up all the way to 33. They traded up to 35 from, I want to say, 41. Who would be your target, your top target?
If you're comfortable with his medicals, it would be Will Johnson. I think clearly, the corner from Michigan. If not, and you think that there's some issues there with his knee and you don't want to take that risk and you're trading up to 33 to get that guaranteed stud, Luther Burden from Missouri would be my pick.
All right. Yeah. You know, and I think it's just funny because there's so many different routes. And that was the case in the first round, too. I mean, I think this is a really unique draft, and it didn't have the top-end talent that maybe we've seen in past drafts. But you get from, like, the 15th pick to the 50th pick, and every single player feels like a potential impact guy. I do want to hit the quarterbacks one more time. You know, Tyler Shuck is a guy that I feel like has been overlooked – and underlooked, and then also talked about a little bit too much at the same time. It's a weird situation. He's a guy that's been in college forever. He was actually a teammate of Juwan Johnson all the way in 2018 at Oregon. And, you know, it's just kind of fascinating because, you know, because of COVID, because of injuries, because of redshirt seasons, he was able to stay in college forever. He will be 26 by the time next season starts, but at the end of the day, I feel like quarterback is the one position, maybe obviously specialist, but that the age doesn't matter to me. Because if you get to a point where the age matters, it's because you're onto a second contract. And if you're onto a second contract, he was good enough for you to sign him to a second contract.
Right.
And if he's going to be good enough to be your starter, then you want to take him. So I just find him really fascinating. Kid out of Louisville, he's had injuries that might scare some people off, but they weren't soft tissue injuries. They weren't ligament injuries. They were, you know, broken collarbone. I believe it happened twice. He had a broken tibia in his leg, you know, or maybe it was a fibula. I don't know. It was a broken bone in his leg. And so those injuries don't scare people off the way that, you know, if someone blew up their knee twice in college might. So he's an intriguing guy. I could see him going off the board really quickly here, and it might surprise some people. I think Saints fans might be up in arms and yelling, who, if he did land with them. But, you know, I just think he's a guy that a lot of people overlooked in this process, but teams are very high on. It's the opposite of Shedeur Sanders, where everyone was talking about him all the time, but teams weren't as high on him as kind of the narrative was around him.
Yeah, so once again, I don't want to reach for a quarterback if I'm the Saints. And there are all these really stout prospects still on the board for one reason or the other. And then once you get to pick 40, you know, we'll see how those first eight picks really go, because it's going to be interesting to see what – I mean, Cleveland has two of them, so maybe they take Shedeur off the board with one of those two picks, and then we're having a little bit of a different tune about the quarterback stuff, because are you really forcing yourself to take QB at pick 40, or can you just potentially wait till later? I know that all the buzz was that they did all this research on this quarterback class and that they're going to take one at some point. But just with all this talent still left on the board, Jeff, I just don't want to force a quarterback at pick 40. I would rather, like you were just mentioning with this entire exercise, go after one of these talented players, whether that be defensive end, whether that be corner, either receiver. There's just some holes that this team has to fill. And I think, yes, quarterback is definitely a huge question mark, especially with what's happened with Derek Carver the past couple weeks. But at the same time, I just don't want to reach.
Yeah, and I think the Browns are going to kind of decide for us whether – this becomes a round where we talk a lot about the quarterbacks, or we kind of are in a holding pattern. Because if they go off the board at number 33 and take Shedeur Sanders, I think a lot of teams are going to follow suit behind them. The Rams are a really interesting team. They picked up some extra assets yesterday, trading out of the first round. So they have all the ammunition they need. If they want to go grab one of these quarterbacks, they could trade up to 33 or 34. So it's going to be really fascinating. You, the listener, tell us what you think. If you want a quarterback, which quarterback do you want? If you don't want a quarterback, what player do you want? What position do you want? Let us know on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. It's 504-260-1870. We got two rounds to go through today, three Saints picks, assuming nothing changes. Stick around for more of Draft First Take, followed by the TrainSouth.com WWL Draft Fest coming up at 6 o'clock live from Hooters of Metairie over on Veterans Boulevard. We're going to come back, talk more about Kelvin Banks here, an exclusive interview with the Saints' number 9 overall selection. Don't miss it. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Charlie Long. This is WWL.
There was a video of your baby spitting up.
Yes. Yes. The first thing I did was check Twitter, and that's all I seen. I was like, no. Funny thing is, before the draft started, my girlfriend was like, she hopes she doesn't have like one of those draft moments, like one of those key draft moments. I was like, I ran back upstairs. I told her, you got your draft moment. She was like, what? And I showed her. She died laughing. It was so hilarious.
All right, back in on WWL Draft Preview Special. That was Saints' first round pick, Kelvin Banks, talking about, hey, what's a draft without a viral moment? Right, it was the clip of him getting the call from the Saints, and if you pan over to the right, you'll see Khalil Banks, a Kelvin's son, having a bit of a moment. I don't think he was making a statement, but it was a pretty funny moment, kind of just to cut the tension. And I think in that clip, you can kind of get a feeling of Kelvin's personality, just how he reacted to that moment. Charlie, did you spot that video when you were
so I didn't see it live, but I saw it on Twitter, and it's definitely a very funny moment, and it's really cool that he was talking about, oh, his girlfriend didn't want the draft moment, and she unintentionally got the draft moment. So that's pretty funny. Jeff, before we get to it, because I want to bring up Sarkisian's comments about Kelvin Banks. We have a lot of texts about, you know, the conversation that we've been having. Just generally speaking, someone texted in, this is from 0698, saying, hey, Jeff and Charlie, I want Jalen Milroe. He was coached by Saban. Another Jalen Milroe fan saying, I would like the Saints to bring in Jalen Milroe if possible, and a cornerback and a big wide receiver today with the three picks. That is from 0198. We have a Will Howard fan from 9026. A little bit elsewhere, we have some people that don't want a quarterback in general with this second pick, or maybe, you know, this texter says 44-25, next year's a better quarterback class. I hope they don't select one with their second pick. Their second, third round pick to take a quarterback would be okay. And then from 1015, this is just a completely different option as far as, you know, we've been talking about the quarterbacks. This guy wants Jaden Higgins, big, tall wide receiver, has great separation, will block, and goes up and gets everything in his radius. He's going to be a stud. Steve Smith loves him. So, you know, it kind of builds a little bit on a point that we were making with Carolina's decision to draft Tet McMillan. This year's wide receiver class isn't last year's class, where it was super electric, where you have guys like Romo Dunze and Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers right at the top, but then there's still some good depth of the class too, like Ladd McConkey goes over 1,000 yards in his rookie season. So I think it's an interesting class, though. It doesn't have the, you know, number of big body receivers that you would like, though. Like, it was Tet McMillan was like the first one, and then there's a little bit of a gap. I think that Jaden Higgins really is that other stud big body receiver in this draft class. A lot of the other guys are kind of slot receivers or kind of smaller receivers. So if you're going to address something that the receiver room is missing, which is that size, I think that Jaden Higgins would be a really great pick.
No question. And can you just hit the Sark comments?
Yes. So right before we get into this exclusive interview that we had with Kelvin Banks, John Hendricks, who now does work for NewOrleans.football, had this earlier. Head coach Steve Sarkisian of the Texas Longhorns said, quote, I think Kelvin's your perfect Longhorn. I said this all along. I would tell any player coming into our program, if you want to be great, be like Kelvin Banks. His demeanor, his work ethic, his drive, his attention to detail, his ability to remain consistent in his approach on and off the field, it all shows in his play. He's a high-level player who obviously has all the measurables in the NFL, is looking for in a great left tackle, and he started there for us from the day he arrived as a freshman. In his second career start, he had to black and block Alabama's Will Anderson and Dallas Turner as a true freshman and didn't flinch. He had a great game, and that was just the beginning of a tremendous career here at Texas. Kelvin had to block so many of the premier defensive ends in the country during his time here. I'll have a little aside here. That's what Mike has talked about so much, about the SEC and defensive linemen. Like, all these offensive linemen in the SEC have to go against these top picks every single week. All these different programs are just loaded on the defensive line. Continuing to his point, so Kelvin had to block so many of the premier defensive ends in the country during his time here, but the thing about him that I know the NFL really values, and we do too, is reliability. You can absolutely count on him. He was here every day and showed up with a constant level of consistency. Who he was some of the time was who he was all of the time. When you can count that with his skill set, the measurables... Oh, hold on 1 second here. I lost it. When you can count that with the skill set, the measurables, and knowing that he's only played 3 years of college football, he's an absolute no-brainer of a first-round pick. He's accomplished so much, but his best days are still ahead of him, and New Orleans is so fortunate to have him. And so that is Kelvin Banks, the comments from Steve Sarkisian, and now we will play, Cullen, the audio of Kelvin Banks last night on WWL Radio.
Okay. Steve, I think we got maybe Kelvin Banks.
We are going to go to our Open Heart Jewelers talk and text line and check in with the Saints' newest draft pick, Kelvin Banks Jr. Thanks so much for joining us. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing great. I'm doing even better now that I'm a Saint, man. I'm so happy.
Just so you know, Kelvin, I'm Steve Geller. You're going to be also talking with Saints legends Bobby Hebert, Deuce McAllister, our NFL draft analyst Mike D'Antilier, and the voice of the Saints, Mike Haas. We got a full house here ready to sound off. I'm going to hand it off to the Cajun Cannon right now. What you got for him, Cannon?
Well, how excited are you to be a New Orleans Saint, and did you expect this? You know, when you're going to get drafted? How interested are? Did you think maybe you could go with this ninth pick with the New Orleans Saints?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very excited to be a New Orleans Saints. I mean, it couldn't have been a better situation for me. I mean, my literally Houston, Texas is like a couple hours down the road, so family's going to be close. And then, like you said, I definitely had an idea that it could be the Saints that could pick me. But it's also that moment where you can't get too happy or too high on something because you ain't never know what happened. It's the NFL draft, so it was definitely something in the back of my head where I had thought the Saints could pick me.
Now, Kelvin, have you played left tackle your whole life, like left offensive tackle? Because Fuaga, who the Saints drafted in the first round, was a right tackle at Oregon State, but they moved to left tackle because there was a need there. So do you see yourself sliding into left tackle because that's where you played and maybe they'll move Fuaga to right tackle? Well, what's your take on that? What have they told you?
Yeah, so, I'm ready. I'm ready to play. I'm prepared to play any position on the line that they want to put me at. If it's at left tackle, left guard, or if it's at center, if it's at right guard or right tackle, I'm just ready to go out there and play. Wherever they need me at, that's where I'm ready to go get the job done at.
Kelvin, I want to tell you, this is Deuce McAllister, man. Congratulations and welcome to the organization. I know this Thank season you played with the injury. How did that affect you coming down the stretch? Coming into the year, you were projected as the number one offensive lineman to be drafted pretty much, you know, top five. But I know that you played with an ankle injury coming down the stretch. How did that affect your play, and are you 100% at this point?
Yeah, so to answer your last question, I'm 100% healthy at this point. But like you were saying, it definitely affected my play in many different ways just by me not being able to fully be able to show my maximum style of play. Just different things of having to switch up some of my techniques based off of how I'm trying to play off the ankle. But nobody's ever healthy late in the season. So it was one of those moments where you just got to suck it up and go out there and play ball.
Kelvin, Mike Dettillier here. First of all, congratulations. And having watched you, man, it's not a lot of guys, but I see it in this draft class. You along with Will Campbell started as a true freshman at Texas, played every game. And to me, that's amazing because of the position you played. And one of the things Will told me was, you know, I could play 66 snaps. I win 64 times. You know what they remember me by? The two times I got beat. And he said, you're on an island, just like a cornerback. So your thoughts of playing that left tackle position, a lot of times you're not getting a lot of help. And it is unique, not only athletically, but mentally you got to be strong to play that spot.
Yes, sir. You definitely do got to be mentally strong because, like you said, it's literally at any moment you could lose. But then you can win every rep, and that guy beat you on that last rep. Now you're the worst left tackle in the history of football. So it's definitely one of those moments where you got to be mentally strong, got to have that next play mentality. And I feel like I always had that. I've always had that mentality of being a strong person and not letting things kind of disrupt the way I play football.
One more question for you, Kelvin. I know you had, earlier in your career, you had committed to Oregon, and then Mario Cristobal decided to leave. He goes to Miami of Florida. But I know one thing. Coach O told me, man, we're trying to get Kelvin Banks Jr. here to LSU. So did you visit here? How was the deal coming to Baton Rouge? And I know the Tigers really liked you back then.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I told the story before, man. Literally that visit I did with my OV with Coach O, I fell in love with LSU, man. So I had silently committed. I had committed that day. And when he ended up getting fired, I was kind of mad because literally, if you want to be honest, I probably would have ended up at LSU if Coach O would have still been there.
Kelvin, this is Mike Haas. I do the radio play-by-play with Deuce, and you've won the Lombardi. You've won the Outland Trophy. So many great things have happened, but there's some things that not many people get to hear, and that is your name being drafted. Talk about that moment, because you were very emotional on the screen, and it's a huge screen here in New Orleans, but talk about that moment and what hearing that name meant.
Yeah, it was a great moment for me and my family, just based off of how much we've been through. I mean, I wouldn't say we grew up the worst, but we didn't have exactly everything everybody had. But my parents always made sure we had what we needed. So it's just one of those moments where I just think back on all the stuff I had to go through, all the stuff my parents had to go through, my mom, my dad, my brother. And just thinking back, like, I'm somebody who can now like put a better narrative on things and kind of help out with the family and stuff like that. So just a lot of emotions going through, just thinking about all the times and all the hard times we had to go through in the past.
Kelvin, just wondering if you got a chance to talk to head coach Kellen Moore yet and your impressions of just whoever you were in contact with before getting drafted.
Yeah, so before getting drafted with the Saints, I really only communicated with them from the combine and then pro day. So we had some great interactions at the combine and the pro day, and I kind of feel the energy of all the coaches, Coach Nugent, Coach Moore, and just feeling out the organization itself. It was a great connection, and I feel like that's what led to them overall kind of just choosing to pick me, and I really appreciate them for that.
KJ Cannon, what you got?
Now, Kelvin, now, how do you view, because you look, you want to be able to do both at a high level. Where do you think you're at right now as far as, I know you want to be dominant in all areas, but are you more like considered a pass protector or like a run blocker? Because what I read, they said a polished pass protector with athleticism and could be a valuable blocker also in the run game. So how do you, when you look at yourself and you critique yourself, how do you view you as far as your pass blocking and also run blocking?
Yeah, I say there's weaknesses and there's strengths into my game in both parts of the aspect. I feel like I have a lot more to. I feel like I have a lot more technique consistently wise to work on. I feel like I wouldn't put one over the other, but I feel like the biggest thing for me is going to be consistently having great technique through each and every rep.
Kelvin, one more thing before we let you go. Try to talk to General Manager Mickey Loomis and kind of convince him to bring along Jaden Blue with you, too, the running back.
Yeah, so, man, I don't think it'll be hard to convince him, man. He's a great playmaker. He's a great kid. I mean, we played with each other for the 3 years I've been there, and he's been the same guy, the same explosive player, the same hard character, loves to win, hates losing, a guy who's going to put it all on the field for you. So I feel like his tape kind of speaks for itself, so it's not so much I can say to kind of try to convince. He just got to go turn the tape on.
Kelvin, definitely awesome stuff. Hear the joy in your voice of getting drafted by the New Orleans Saints. One thing we got to ask from you, now that you're a member of the Black and Gold, let us hear that "Who Dat" chant for the fans out there.
Yes, sir. Who that says he's going to beat Tim Saints? Let's go.
All right. Kelvin Banks joining us here on WWL Saints Radio.
Who that?
That was Kelvin Banks' exclusive interview with the guys on WWL, first night of Draft Fest. And guys, we got some more texts that came in about the Saints at pick 40 today. Someone, let's see, this is from Earl from Metairie. This is 7052, said, Gamecocks safety ball hawk Neek Emenwori is his favorite pick for the Saints at pick 40. If he's there, listen, that is Mike's number three player on the board, and pre-draft was his number one ranked safety in the class. So that would be a really nice pick. And then we got another shout-out for Jack Besh, a local prospect from 3398. And, you know, Jack Besh, Mike's pro comp for him was Puka Nacua. He catches every single thing that touches his hands. So, you know, we'll see what the Saints end up doing with pick 40. But we'll talk a little bit more about that with Triple Option coming up right after this break.
All right. Coming back in on our Draft Fest preview show, getting into our Triple Option segment. Charlie, you're up first. What you got?
Guys, I'm going with the top 10 on Mike D's draft board, the top 10 players available entering day two. Number one, Will Johnson, the cornerback from Michigan. He's the 11th overall prospect on Mike D's big board. Obviously, he's fallen a little bit because of these knee issues. Number two, Mike Green, the defensive end for Marshall, 18th overall on Mike's big board, falling because of some character concerns. Number three, Neek Emenwori, who was kind of a 50-50 to go either first round or second round, but he's going to fly off the board pretty quickly. The safety from South Carolina, a freak athlete at 21 overall. Number four is Luther Burden, the wide receiver for Mizzou, 27th overall ranked player. Number five is Trevion Henderson, the running back from Ohio State, 29th overall player. Six is Shedeur Sanders, the quarterback from Colorado. Seven is Donovan Ezeraku, the defensive end from Boston College. Eight is Mason Taylor, the tight end from LSU. Nine is Trey Amos, the cornerback from Ole Miss. And 10 is Siobhan Revell, the cornerback from East Carolina. Right behind them, guys, by the way, 11 is Jalen Milroe, the quarterback from Alabama, too. So he just missed the cut. But there's a lot of good players in that list. So the Saints, if they stay put and they stay, you know, they don't try to force a trade up from pick 40 to move up in the second round, I think that they'll have someone fall right into their laps.
All right, Cullen.
Guys, I was kind of looking at today, as we know, things are going to get faster. The amount of time that the teams have is gonna pick up. We're going to be able to get through these picks a lot faster. And Roger Goodell spoke with Pat McAfee earlier today about some ideas that the NFL has been kicking around regarding speeding up the first round. As we all know, 10 minutes. And as we saw last night, they used up a lot of those 10 minutes. And one of the new ideas they're tossing around is 7 minutes. But you have this, like, two-minute, like, extender that you can use once per draft. Not once per, like, round, but once per draft. Could you use that in the first round? Would you? I feel like you would only use it in the first round. Why would you want to use it in the sixth or seventh?
Maybe if you're trying to get a trade done or something like that. Like,
possibly.
I think the funny thing about this year's first round was that a lot of the picks were flying in. People knew what they wanted.
At the end, yes.
But even sometimes, like, in the middle of the class. Like,
which is weird with how uncertain it
was.
The
quickest pick of the night felt like the Colts, right, with Tyler Warren. Tyler Warren falls into their lap. They ran up to the podium. We're taking Tyler Warren. We're taking Tyler Warren. But it happened a couple times throughout the draft where, like, the pick was in for, like, 5 minutes, and they're just in a commercial break.
Yeah, we're just waiting.
And we're just waiting. We're just waiting. We're just waiting. But, you know, they obviously have to do it for TV, too.
Was it – I think it might have been the Vikings. There was a team that – didn't get a draft pick in 1 year, and they just didn't get a pick.
I think it was the Vikings.
It was the Vikings. I can't remember what year it was. Maybe 2003. So maybe that's what it's about. Maybe if a team's like, oh no, we're just not going to get our pick in, so they just slotted
it
in.
2003. They ran out of time with their seventh overall pick. Could you imagine that?
I mean, seventh overall.
That's crazy.
Imagine if the Saints ran out of time last night and
with
just, like,
Kelvin Banks. Oh my!
We just, like, didn't pick a guy.
That would not be good.
Yeah, that's tough to sell to your fans.
All right, Jeff, so what's yours?
All right, so mine's a little different, but I do want to remind everyone that April is Autism Awareness Month. Kai Harley, Saints assistant GM, just spoke to the media to update, you know, all the work that the Saints organization has been doing to, you know, kind of make the NFL draft a tentpole event. If you're watching on the NFL Network, ESPN, and they show clips inside the Saints war room, if you're going on Saints social media posts and you see clips from inside the war room, you can see that there's a lot of signage, there's a lot of things going on to promote that. So, you know, I wouldn't say it's a hot take, but I do think it's an important thing, and it's just a reminder to check in on that. And if you're interested in all the work they've been doing, definitely go check out all the stuff Kai Harley has been doing, because it's important work.
Absolutely, and that's it for our Bet365 triple option feature, Cullen.
All right, coming back in one more segment on Draft First Take, Jeff Nowak with Charlie Long, Cullen Steele behind the glass, kicking off today's marathon of coverage, rounds 2 and 3 of the NFL Draft. Saints have 3 picks, number 40, number 71, number 93 at 6. We're going to kick over to Hooters in Metairie with Bobby Hebert, Mike Dettillier, Deuce McAllister, and Steve Geller to take you through the rest of the draft. But first things first, want to do one more round table, go through our last second mock draft picks for number 40 overall. We're going to assume they stay. We're not going to predict any trades. We're going to start with Cullen. Cullen, Steele, who is your pick?
I'm swinging for it. The optimist in me is taking the wheel. Jalen Milroe.
Okay.
I love
the
it.
Wheel.
The wheel. Okay. I'm not pessimistic. Get me something to get excited about.
I dig it.
In an hour and a half, hopefully the pick is in by then, I will be hooting and hollering in the studio.
Okay. Charlie, what you got?
Jalen's my preferred quarterback if they decide to go quarterback at 40, just because the ceiling is there. And by all accounts, the kid's got a great work ethic. And that's the type of people that you like to bet on in the draft. And listen, when you have, and Jeff, you've mentioned this before, the amount of quarterbacks that you have on this staff with Nussmeier and Moore and Tolzien, like, you can imagine that they could potentially get the best out of someone like Jalen Milroe. So I'm a big fan. If you're going quarterback, that would be my pick. I would prefer Milroe over Tyler Shuck. I think he has a higher ceiling than Tyler Shuck, and so that would be my swing if they swing at quarterback at 40. Otherwise, if they just go with BPA and they go with their board, Trey Amos, the cornerback from Ole Miss, would be my selection.
If you're taking Jalen Milroe, just a question, are you creating a package and using him like Taysom Hill and getting him on the field even if he's not starting?
You could, right off the bat, because you're not throwing – let's be clear about this. If you're taking Jalen Milroe and you're starting him day one at quarterback, you're setting him up for failure. So
yes.
I'm not saying that you're going to throw him out immediately and be the day one starter for this team in 2025. I think that this is more of a long-term projection play than, you know, just potentially throwing him out there right off the bat. So, yeah, but if you want to use him in some Taysom Hill packages, I could absolutely see that – instead of having him start at cornerback immediately. So, what about you?
Interesting. For me, okay, so I'm going to stick. I've been on Tyler Shuck for a while. I think Tyler Shuck is the second best quarterback in this draft class. To me, he's Jared Goff, and I just see him developing. I'm not worried about the age. I don't want to see him trade up. I don't want to see them use more assets. If he's there at 40, I like it. I don't like him to spend more to go get him. And if he's not there at 40, like I said, Donovan Ezeraku or Mike Green, one of those two guys. I want my edge rusher. I want to set Brandon Staley's defense up for success. And, you know, that seems to be the best way to do it for me. But all right, we're going to close this Draft Fest preview out. I'm Jeff Nowak alongside Charlie Long, Cullen Steele. We're going to kick it over to the gang at Hooters in Metairie. Go check it out. Get some wings. Let me know how they are. Hit us up on the Okanagan Drewers Talk text line 504-260-1870 with any questions, hot takes, picks. Let's do it. Draft night. Hoot at. Go Saints. BZL. Peace.